Hello, everyone. It's time for another edition of Adventures in Careerland. Hello, I am your host, Adriano Magnifico. I'm the career lead at the Louis Riel Arts and Technology Center. And that's a very involved and busy place with 13 technical, applied, and apprenticeship programs. They include things like building trades, culinary arts, early childhood educator, electrical trades, information systems, new media design, and a host of others. But the real gem in this little collection is something called the Broadcast Media Program. And that's where we are coming from. We're coming from the podcast studio in the Broadcast Media Program. That's one of the 13 programs here. And this is a really amazing program where students learn the ins and outs of how to be journalists, of how to be broadcast media folks, of how to operate big time mother of God cameras, and how to prepare themselves for the world of work. That's what this is all about. In the end, life's about preparing yourself for what lies ahead. And this is one of those programs where high school students from the 7 high schools in Louis Riel School Division and other schools get to choose a space where they can extend their high school education into a space that really builds skills, really builds and tests and gauges what you're capable of. Because part of the world that's really important is, what are your skills? What are you good at? How can you connect to an organization? And that's what this place does exceedingly well. So I'm always proud to be a part of this group, this great group of teachers here, the great 13 programs here. And I'm always especially happy and blessed to work with some of the broadcast media students who are producing this. And they are in the broadcast media production space. And I'm happy they're in there watching this, making sure our sound levels are good, making sure we don't say nasty or crude things. They edit this up when it's all done and ready. They put a little music into it, and they turn it into, kind of a production, something that's pretty cool to listen to. That's what we find. We are in season 8. We're in episode number 3 of season 8, and this is episode number 85. How amazing is that? 85 in the long continuum of stories. We call them adventures, because every life is an adventure. And speaking of adventure, we have 2 co-hosts with us, and one of the co-hosts is from the Broadcast Media Program. This is André Poirier. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, you said it right. I am one of the classes of all time. I didn't say that right. Can we try that again?
I don't even know what that means.
I am one of the students of all time.
What does that mean? I'm one of the students of all time.
Just one of them.
Okay, this is he's one of the multi-trillion billion collection of students that have gone to a school. Is that what you mean?
Or absolutely.
Alright, anyway, how are you doing?
I am doing amazing today.
Yeah, and you guys were working with the cameras today in the broadcast media program. They're walking around with the big cameras on their shoulders like they are working a big Canadian Football League game or being a broadcast team checking out an amazing news event. So how do you feel doing that kind of work?
It was fun. It's fun being behind the camera, and then it's also kind of fun when I get pushed in front of the camera, and then there's 5 of them on me. They're all just, like, messing around. They're like, all right, do this, do this, do this.
So you like that spotlight?
I guess. Depends.
Which one do you like more, the spotlight or the back of the scene?
They're both equal. Like, I don't like the back because I don't feel like I get enough attention, but then I'm in the front, I feel like I'm getting too much attention.
Oh, you have so much to learn, my minion. Oh, my gosh. So much thinking to do. And Lena Alfori, she is from the Applied Business Management Program. And as I've said before, we've never had an outsider come into the space. So very pleased to have you here. And Lena, how are you today?
I'm doing really good. Very, very good.
And what's going on in the Applied Business Management Program?
A lot of exciting things. This week we're visiting do you guys know Activate?
Yes.
That place.
Yes.
We're visiting the 3D manufacturing area, like where they make all their products. So I'm super excited. We're going to Harvest Manitoba. We've been working on our internship, like sending a bunch of emails. And yeah, it's been a very exciting week so far. So yeah, I'm excited.
And that's the interesting part of these programs, right? You're never sitting still. It's very hands-on, but there's also lots of thinking and learning you have to do. Would you both say there's a lot of learning that goes on
for
in these
sure.
programs?
Yeah, 100%.
Too much. My brain can't handle it.
I know you hate to really push yourself. We learned that from you. You hate to push yourself, but you understand when you push yourself and when you get good at something, you become a highly valued employee somewhere.
Exactly. When I push myself, I'm actually happy when I finish something.
Yeah.
Me too.
That's a great feeling, right? But you have to get over that hump about, should I do this? Can I do this? Am I any good at this? Do you have to get over that hump first?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You can't, if you go, oh, I'm not good at this, I'm never going to try, you're never going to be good at it. Mm-hmm. If you don't think you're going to be good at it, you're not going to be good at it.
I like this. Now, he's talking like we should climb up to a mountain to listen to him, but
absolutely.
I don't know if you recall, Andre's original talk was, when I wasn't good at something, I shied away from it. Are you getting past that?
Step by step. Baby steps into
it. It takes time.
Dipping my toes into different things.
It takes time. Hey, so I want to ask you about AI. So how is AI, artificial intelligence, how is even things like ChatGPT and other tools like that, are you using them at all and what are you doing with them?
For my podcast I'm making, Rally Through Time, I did use that. I am using ChatGPT to just sort of get ideas for different topics because I can't get my ideas together, but I never use it for research because AI doesn't seem to be good at understanding things.
How about you, Lena?
I use it for ideas like that too. I never copy the exact thing, but when I'm stuck, let's say, like I have used it on English essays, I can't lie. Just for an idea, I've never copied.
You know,
the
I'm an
thing.
Old English teacher, right?
Oh no. I've used it for ideas when I'm stuck, and it just kind of gives me an idea, and I just go from there. So it helps me actually a lot when I'm stuck.
Because I think AI is really going to transform the way you youngins are going to do work.
Yeah, 100%.
I really believe that. Mm-hmm. I think we're just, I mean, how long has it been around? How long have you known about ChatGPT?
Like
3 years?
3 years.
I have not known about it for 3 years.
Like 8 months?
I learned about it
8 months?
like
3 years.
The middle
Where
of
you are? Like,
2023.
It was before ChatGPT. It was one of the older AIs. I'm like, oh, there's things that can write stuff for me?
I didn't know
Sounds
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, those are bots that were writing pretty basic news articles and stuff like that. Right?
I mean, like, but their power was super limited. Like, they had no ideas.
But different organizations like Reuters and Reuters was using or the AP were using these to write some quick headlines and to get things done like that. I think.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah,
so they were using
those.
So they've been around for. You're right. They have been around for a few years.
Oh yeah.
But in these applications, are you worried about it?
Yeah, like it is.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's like there's pros and cons, but I feel like some students are using it to their advantage, like a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Like some students will, like there has been like a couple students in my class who have done their whole essay with ChatGPT, and it's just like,
are you squealing on him right now? How do the teachers feel about ChatGPT?
They hate it. Oh, absolutely. They all give a lecture in the beginning of my classes.
You shall not use ChatGPT.
Right in the beginning of first semester, I had a bunch of, all my teachers were like, okay, so about ChatGPT, they had slides, PowerPoints, the rules. Yeah, it's bad.
It's a really bad.
So this is a typical thing that school does. Instead of embracing it and using it, they're trying to ban it from you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Some teachers are like, okay, we'll use ChatGPT for this to help you guys understand how it's supposed to be used and how we can use it. You know, integrating it into school instead of just removing it.
Do you use it in this program here?
Yes.
The broadcast media program or the applied business management program?
Yeah, Mr. Kuipers has talked about like exactly what Andre just said, like how to use it correctly instead of just using it for your whole thing and just copy and pasting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like he agrees with the part where it's like if you want it for an idea, we're allowed to use it. So yeah.
All right. So it's still evolving, but that's very interesting. I'm going to segue into our guest. We have a special guest today. He's in the studio. We're live in the studio. We're breathing. We're not looking at a phone. We're not swiping. We're not doing anything. We're with human beings connecting with one another. It's a beautiful moment
beautiful
in the podcast studio.
Beautiful thing about podcasts.
It's a beautiful. Well, next week and the next few weeks, you'll see we'll be in different exotic ports of call. But I'd like to introduce Natan Rouman, who is a former student at Nelson Mack, and he graduated way back in 2020. But now he's working for Yakta, which is, I had no idea what that was. And I reconnected. I worked with him on a Propel program at Nelson Mack way back when. Welcome, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Can you inject into the AI conversation? Because you are a content developer. Would you say you're that way? Or what would you say?
Creator? Content creator is my...
Creator. Curator, developer, creator at Yakta. And what is Yakta?
Yeah, so Yacto, we make zero-turn lawnmowers. Those are the... I tell people lawnmowers, but like you wouldn't use it in your average backyard. They're really big and they're really expensive.
Industrial?
Yeah, there's like a lot of commercial people mm-hmm. that like their business is to go around mowing people's lawns, and some of them use zero turns, and then some people with very large acreages like to have zero turns, and that's our sort of target.
Boy, you're speaking the lingo.
Yeah.
Of the lawnmower.
Yeah, I've gotten pretty bad at remembering to like introduce terms.
And you were never that kid, like that. You were never that kid in high school where, hey, I'll take that lawnmower apart.
Yeah, no.
Let me fix that part of. Oh yeah. So the beauty of you being here is you're in what looks like a very odd place for social media, a very odd place for content developing. But every company now needs someone like you. Explain what that is. What is a content developer for a lawnmower company?
Yeah, I'm actually, even in, I guess, marketing, I'm in a pretty interesting position because I don't actually make, like I do sometimes, I make some content on my phone, but I don't actually produce the videos most of the time. We have a videographer and we have a graphic designer. I do the strategy side where I sort of, right now, today actually, we'll be doing the May kickoff where I'll talk to my CMO and we decide sort of the feature, the theme that we want to follow throughout the whole month. And then I'll go off and sort of strategize, okay, we'll want this many reels on Instagram Magnifico. Those are the vertical videos on Instagram and Facebook.
How exciting.
How many photo posts we'll want and how many videos and that sort of thing. And then we'll have I'll essentially pitch that to our creative team is what we call them, the videographer and the graphic designer, and they'll actually decide what they'll look like and what they'll do in the videos and stuff like that. So I'm more on the strategy end, making sure that we meet our performance metrics, like getting the reach that we want and getting the follower growth that we need, stuff like that.
Well, I'm stunned listening to you because in grade 11 and 12, you were nothing like this. You sound like an astute business person.
Well, you fake it till you make it.
And what sort of formats do your, what kind of ideas do you usually pitch? Like, what kind of tactics do you use to get people to buy the lawnmowers? It's like, buy our lawnmowers. Buy our lawnmowers.
Yeah, like subliminal messaging. Like, we'll do some meme videos and then, like, it'll blink the lawnmower. Mm-hmm. The fun thing about this sort of setup that we have that's very unusual, because usually you have maybe one or two people on social media, mm-hmm. is we get to experiment a lot and do things like we have a carousel with a video. It's a video carousel on Instagram, and we'll actually take the second photo and like make it look like it's bouncing into the first photo. And so sort of our main goal is really try to do anything to stop the scroll.
Yeah.
So where did you learn all these skills? Is this you've taken the CreeCom program, right?
Yeah.
Did you learn those skills in creative communications at Red River?
I think the main thing I learned in CreeCom is the work ethic, to be honest.
So you didn't learn these things. You had to learn them on the job.
You learn a lot of things in CreeCom. Like you learn a very large skill set, and I'm sure it's the same in this program. And so I learned a lot about marketing and Media Pro and stuff like that. But when it comes to actual social media, a lot of it was learned on the job. Like I got a foundation in CreeCom, but a large portion of it was actually being in the trenches, so to speak, and doing it.
Well, and did you discover you're a quick learner? Because
no.
You... Really?
I like to say that I am, and maybe I am, but it feels like I need to be reminded of things a lot. Like, I'll just, like, someone will tell me something, I'll be like, cool, back to work, and then I'll forget it. And it'll take me, like, 3 or 4 times of being, like, reminded, like...
Because you're, like, hyper-focused.
Yeah, I'm hyper-focused, and I think I probably have ADHD. I bounce around a lot, especially when I have, like, 6 tasks in a day. I'll be scatterbrained all the time.
Yeah, but for me, honestly, that's your strength. Like you talk about that. Yeah. Like I think when people talk about that, like I can't focus and or I'm having some trouble or you label yourself ADHD, I think that's your best strength. And when you work with it properly, like you are now, like you're going to do a presentation to the founders of the company in the next little while. That's a pretty cool thing, man, from where I saw you.
every Monday I present how well I did the last week. So that's always fun.
Which is, and do you ever have some time where it didn't go well that week?
With social media, pretty often.
Or we didn't hit the metrics?
Yeah, when we do hit the metrics, like we did 2 weeks ago on like the dumbest post, we made one post and it hit my like weekly reach limit. That's like how many people view your post, but only like if you view my post twice, you only count as one. So we care about that a lot more than impressions. Mm-hmm. I made one stupid post that I made myself. That's usually the ones that I make are like handheld, super low quality, or like not super low quality, but low effort. And it like did so well. It beat my metrics times two for like a whole week.
I feel like that's also the thing with like internet is a lot of the low, like the dumb things become the most popular. Yeah. People just find dumb things funny.
Well, also, if you go too over the top, especially on social media, right, it feels like an ad. Like, you can sort of instinctively feel like this is an ad. And, like, when I scroll TikTok, you get an ad every three posts. And it's honestly done, like, the exact opposite of making me see the ads more. I just immediately swipe away.
Yeah.
So you don't want to feel like an ad.
You've gotten conditioned to just, that's an ad.
Yeah, exactly.
So your creativity is on fire all the time. You're constantly trying to find ways to create a sense of freshness and rawness in the video, promoting the product, at the same time hoping they don't perceive I'm promoting the product. They're just engaging you.
That's the fun part about marketing. Yeah, you're trying to get people to like engage and care about your product, but nobody wants to buy your product.
And what's your creative process like? Like, where do you get your inspiration?
I wish I had that note down. It's really just like, I think you just have to do things that aren't sit there and try and force it. And it'll just come to you. And sometimes you do have to just sit down and be like, okay, I need to come up with 16 posts for the next 3 weeks. What do I do? And
well, it's part of your process. Yeah. There's all kinds of processes in my brain when I do a lot of writing, and when I'm stuck all the time and I go out for a walk with the dog and I come back and suddenly I'm on fire. Do you ever just leave what you're working on, move on to something else and come back and go, oh, yes. Or you see something, you're looking out the window and something goes, oh my gosh, yes, I can do that. How is that?
And I think me being able to like bounce around to different projects helps with that a lot. It makes it hard to like know exactly what gets my creativity going, but I'll do one project and I'll get inspiration for another project and I'll bounce back to that. It makes me really hard to manage, but it works for me.
Yeah, but that's part of the creative process. If we're hiring creatives, then we have to acknowledge that they have a way to create, and there's no one way to create. It's interesting because in high school, is it fair to say, because we chatted yesterday, you felt a bit frustrated by the high school system? You joined an off-the-beat program called Propel in grade 11. So you left. Like, you literally moved around searching for something with your parents involved too, right? About you went to Frontenac School, should have been going to Windsor Park Collegiate. Instead, you went to Nelson Mac. Because talk about that process a bit and what you were searching for and what you thought you were getting into and how that nurtured you a bit differently than a conventional path.
Yeah, I think the decision to go to Nelson Mac in the first place, at the time I was, I like to say, not an amazing student, but a not bad student. I had like a math tutor, which was helping me with my failings in math. and it was a brand new program, the project-based learning there. And I think it was just for that new program that had seen a little bit of success before. And ultimately, I can't remember how I made that decision or how likely my mom made that decision.
Yeah, your mom made it for you.
Probably.
Probably. Yeah. Because you're in grade 9, right, when you're getting in there. So it's always amazing when parents go to their children and say, what would you like to do? What would you like to do? Without any experience.
Yeah. I was a 13-year-old when they made that decision. Yeah. What am I going to do at 13 years old?
And it's such a visceral kind of emotional experience for someone to make a change from your neighborhood and coming over. Your parent has the bigger picture of what that means and what it could mean. As a kid, when I'm looking back when I was, I just reacted to what was happening. I didn't think about, maybe this will help me get into the right program I want to get into when I'm, I don't, I was never like that.
Yeah.
So you're walking the hallways of Nelson Mack. What is that like?
Well, luckily, some of the people I knew from Frontenac also came to Nelson Mack, so I wasn't entirely alone. And I think I was still in the same sort of mentality of, like, just go with the flow, let things sort themselves out. And I just wasn't really great at applying myself in classes very much. Like, I would show up to class, I would do fine. Some classes I would do a lot better than others. But then I'd get home and really I'd just, like, play video games all night. Like, I wouldn't really study. And I think that was sort of my downfall. But also at the time, like, I'm 14 years old, I'm 15 years old. Like, yeah.
Do you also think that that could have been, like, a result of how the school system is? Because schools go, here's stuff you have to do at school for 6 hours, and here's stuff you have to do at home for another, like, 2-3 hours. Do you think that could have been, like, very discouraging?
Yeah. Plus, there's an hour-long bus ride back home.
Yeah.
So there's, like, an hour of disconnect from school that I've been sitting on my phone, scrolling Instagram at the time. So definitely. And then when I get home, it's like I'm competing with my Xbox. I'm competing with other, like, there's so many things that are competing for my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't have the discipline at the time, I guess, to be like, I'm going to sit down and study.
Yeah.
What kid does? Like, there's...
Exactly.
There's a special skill to sitting down and taking in information that isn't yours, that's somebody else's. There's a special skill in doing that. Like, it's a very academic skill. And I think we're moving away from the academic programming. The PBL was a hands-on. You get to stand up. You get to move. You get to work on projects. You get to work on teams. Did that appeal to you way more than sitting in the desk at Windsor Park?
Probably. I never had the other hand of it, so I don't know exactly. But I did really enjoy it. And another thought just slipped my mind. I can't remember what it was. But... yeah, I think it did definitely help when I was in the classroom, was having a specific...
You were in the Propel program for each of those semesters in grade 11 and then another semester in grade 12. What was a project? You get to work on a big-time project. What was a project you worked on? Do you remember?
In my grade 11 year, I made a clothing brand. Really, I just made hoodies, but I think the main thing I took away from it was the actual creating the brand of it and creating the, like, messaging and... sort of like choosing a unique value proposition, which you taught me that, Magnifico. Yeah, it was everything around the brand that I really took away from it.
Remember you had attitude too.
Did I?
Oh yeah.
I don't remember.
You had attitude. Like you weren't open. Like you came into that program because you wanted to do your own thing, right?
Probably.
Like, and that's where some students come into the program saying, here's my chance to do my own thing. And I remember chatting with you a number of times saying, are you sure you want to do this? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I really wanted to do a clothing brand at the time. Yes. Like, I was just like, yes, I want to do this. And then you were like, well, what's your UVP? Why would anyone buy this? Extremely saturated market. How are you going to sell it to people?
And you perceived it at the time as, he's throwing water on my fire I got going
here. I was like, I just want to make hoodies. And I'm a terrible procrastinator, so... if you didn't do that, I wouldn't have done anything.
I know. You worked hard because of those hard questions and just to prove me wrong all the time. And I like that about you because there's attitude that comes with that. And sometimes I'll stir that attitude pot a little bit and try to get it going in you and just walk away. You go, that Magnifico told me this thing doesn't work unless I give it one of these, with that kind of voice. My precious. Something like that. That wasn't my precious voice. Anyway. So when you work on that project, how did it go? Like, I remember you making the shirts and you were selling them. How did that all go? How did that all feel? You're a young entrepreneur trying to move a brand, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I sold a few, mostly to my friends, as most small businesses go. I also had to figure out the logistics of shipping one to Saskatchewan, and that was a nightmare. And I did it in a very unscalable way. And it also took away pretty much the entire profit margin of selling the hoodie.
The guy's got a $5,000 hoodie, but he likes it.
And then I'm pretty sure all of the profit I made from the actual selling of the hoodies, I probably spent on like Subway. Because yeah. I also didn't have much financial skills at the time.
Yeah, I myself actually went to Propel last year, and I also have a clothing brand. I created one there, and then I still have it now. And I totally understand the struggle. I don't make any profit. I had to ship something the other day to Nebraska, and it basically I paid $30 for shipping, and then Shopify takes a cut. And so I totally understand that struggle of like making no profit at first.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's rough.
So Lena, do you think there's a better way?
Well, how I think of it is, in the beginning, you have to spend more than what you're gaining to get to the point where you are making more, if that makes sense. So
So you have some inventory to begin with, right?
Yeah.
You have to spend, there has to be an outlay of capital to get it all going, right?
Yeah.
Right. In Junior Achievement, which is one of the companies, one of those organizations that helps us help students, we had JA going at that time, right? I don't know if you remember, but Jay was going, and that's a company where we sell shares in the company so that we have capital to build the original product, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we might raise $400 or $500 in shares, knowing that we have to pay back that at a certain percentage. And that's a cool way to understand how a business actually works. Where am I getting my initial capital to start this company off? And through JA, it's about shares. People invest in your company, right?
And JA has some like structure to it, right? So it forces you to like do the math and like know how much to charge. And because you have a whole team, like different people can work on different things.
Yes. Yeah. And you got that. You were in JA, weren't you?
Yeah.
For part of it. And you saw the difference between, did you not connect the difference between your haphazard version and the JA version? You must have seen that every time you walked into a JA meeting with 20 people, and then you on your own doing it in Propel with you totally doing it yourself. Mm-hmm. And that was the cool thing. When you totally do it yourself, you learn very quickly, don't you?
Yeah.
Lena, you're learning very quickly?
Oh, yeah.
About what not to do?
Yes.
Okay. and that's where entrepreneurs do that. Now, are you interested in starting a small business one day, Natan?
Probably, yeah. Probably marketing related.
And so you don't have that clothing business anymore?
I mean, like, I don't... It depends how you define, like, have it.
Okay.
And if you define it as, like...
He's using them now to clean his car.
And if you define it as, like, actually...
That's a beautiful cotton cloth. Yes, it is. It's called the unknown cloth.
Exactly.
It's a bit of a chamois now. I've turned it into a chamois.
Hey, Lena, are you just trying to find a partnership?
Yes.
you sponsor me, I'll sponsor you.
This guy, you're the broker. There's a massive business happening right here. We have Andre here who's going to broker everything. I'll take care of all the shipping, but I get a piece of the pie.
Don't you worry about it.
There you go. Now he's talking like we know you have to talk. So that's very interesting. You leave the Nelson Mac program, and was your initial plan to go into Crecom? Because in your second half, you got a Crecom portfolio together, correct?
Yeah.
So what prompted you to think, I should do the creative communications route?
Yeah, at the time, I really just wanted to do something with cameras. Because I did like the 48-hour film competition that actually takes place here. I don't know if it's still going. But I really enjoyed it. And I was like, hey, well, I want to do some kind of like media production or something. And then applying to university really confused me. And I didn't want to ask for help because that's admitting defeat. I'm really bad at asking for help. And Red River was simple enough, and I found out about it because one of those like recruiters came to Nelson Mac, and I was like, is there any program like with cameras? And now there's one that's dedicated to that. It's not Crecom, but it didn't exist at the time.
Yes, photography. It's a photography thing.
Right? Not photography. They have like just a 1 year media production.
Okay.
And I'm really happy it didn't exist at the time, because I would have gone into that and I wouldn't be doing marketing.
With Yakta.
Yeah.
I love that. I have to keep saying that word, Yakta.
And you're wearing the shirt as well.
Yeah, and I'm wearing the jacket, and I have a bunch of shirts as well, and like vests and stuff.
That's impressive. So they're pretty much defining your outfits and your style and your culture. Look at you. You're walking around.
I just like them. But yeah. I mean, I work there, so I kind of want to, you know, promote the brand.
No, and the stuff looks good. And I just sent you a note the other day about the growth of the company. There's a big article in the Free Press about the growth of Yakta and how they're trying to move into markets. It's very interesting stuff. It sounds like it started in Winnipeg, Yakta. Is the little company, or is this the head office, or?
Well, Yakta is in Woodlands. It's about half an hour out of the perimeter.
Yes.
We're the sister company of Arrowquip, which makes like cattle chutes for cow farming. And they originated in Australia, came here 2000, I want to say three, but I might be way off on that. Yeah.
Okay, no, that's fine.
I forgot the question.
That's okay. I don't even know what the question was. I don't think it matters. I'm interested in what else you've done before Yakta, because you seem like you're in a good place right now, and you're doing work that you like to do, and it seems to connect to the way you like to work, and they're giving you freedom to do that, right? To move and to do, and they're not always, punctuating your work with, you should have hit this mark. They're giving you some freedom to move and to experiment and do. So that must be a good feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Well, keeping track of those like metrics is really important of like, yes. Did I hit my goal this week? Because it all works its way up the chain to generating leads, which makes our revenue.
Yes. Which pays your salary.
Yeah. And it pays the salary of everyone making the mowers and like everyone working very hard to sell them. And so it's really important that we hit those numbers.
So what did you do before Yakta? You must have gone off right after Crecom. Because do you do a co-op with Crecom as well? So where did you co-op and what did you learn? Tell us about what you learned in these places and how it kind of defined that would even allow you to think, I'm going to apply for this Yakta opportunity.
Mm-hmm. My first work placement was called Worker BTV. They make video and ads for associations. And then my
Some students here, I think, have interned with Worker Bee.
Okay.
In the broadcast media program.
It was an awesome place to be, and I got to work on a bunch of different teams, and it was a lot of fun. My second one was it's called LDAM, Learning Disabilities Association of Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the complete opposite, because at Worker Bee, they have a massive team, and at LDAM, I was the first marketing person they ever had. Including like interns or anything.
So you went from a private company to a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And of course, what was the difference between you just said it, right?
Yeah.
The amount of money available to build your brand to do things is considerably less with a nonprofit. What did you learn in the disability space though? That sounds like a great learning moment for you.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't there long enough to learn a whole bunch, unfortunately, but it was...
Or just your perception of what kind of work is happening out there and what companies can look like. It doesn't have to look like Worker Bee. That's a different looking company, this one, right?
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah, it's just interesting how... Because I came into LDAM like with the idea that I was just going to do some like social media thing, because I hadn't done a whole bunch of social media at the time and I wanted to get better at it. And then I got there and I was like, all of these things like your marketing strategy that I learned in Crecom that you kind of need to base off to run with to do everything else, they never had, because they never had a marketing person. And so I really got a chance to do something that you wouldn't really get to do until you're maybe 10 plus years into your career, if ever. And that's like defining the marketing strategy of a business, which they do right at the beginning, and if things go sideways, then you kind of reevaluate it. But it's like the top of the chain does that, right? Your chief marketing officer, or you hire an agency.
So how big was the team then?
At LDAM?
LDAM, yes.
The entire business, I think, was four people, and I was working with the director primarily to like figure everything out and be like, this is what we're doing for this, and...
So how did you feel about that experience then? Because nonprofits are different spaces entirely where you work, right? They don't pay you as well, but you're doing sometimes a lot of work. But you also build skills because they need you to do a lot of things,
right?
So how was that? Was it an eye-opener for you? Did you build some skills you didn't know you had? Talk about that moment working with those guys, interning with those guys.
Yeah, and I went into it thinking I was going to build, like, social media skills, and I really built, like, I think that was the foundation of, like, my strategy skills of, like, critically looking at, like, who our audience will be and how are we going to engage with them and how are we going to get them to be interested in our business. And I think I also learned how to sort of plan, which I was pretty bad at.
That's hard. And so you became a project manager there too.
Essentially, yeah.
You're managing projects. And you know, you can go off. That's a highly valued skill. When they do when they check out algorithms, or they run algorithms over some of the job profiles that are in Monster and Indeed and job banks, project manager's right up there. That's one of the most sought after jobs people can get. And you can get designations. You've seen them maybe at the UAW. You can get a project management designation. And sometimes people who think, I don't have education, you go get one of those for a couple of years. While you're working, it puts you in a whole different light when you're applying for different companies. That's a powerful piece.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So good experience overall. Those experiences. And then you went to Yakta after these two?
Well, I finished my work placement like early April, and I didn't start at Yakta until early August. So after CRECOM, I just couldn't find a job until I started doing a bit of I did a freelance for LDAM for a little bit, like doing social media. And then it took me so long to find a job because, honestly, I can't even remember. I'm just like terrible at job seeking. I just hate it so much. And I'm like terrible at interviews and all that. And then I did
construction work. I think you're selling yourself short. You did construction work?
I did construction work for 2 days, and I was like, I'm not built for this. And as I was driving home, I got a message from Yakta, from AeroQuip's like executive assistant through LinkedIn, probably 2 hours after I actually drove by their building on my way home.
Did you even apply there?
No.
So
they reached out to me on LinkedIn.
So you had the recruiting mode on in LinkedIn.
I don't think so. I think it's because someone I went to school with works at AeroQuip.
So that's the word of mouth piece, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's like how we do all our hiring, is through our network.
Does it feel good to get asked to join? Like,
it was great.
Instead of being like, hey, can I join? It's like, we want you.
Yeah. I was a bit confused at first because I'd never heard of Yakta, but I like remembered driving by the building on my way home, and I like remembered the logo, and that's how I was like, hey, maybe I can.
That sounds like all the stars are aligning.
Almost. I think I was very lucky.
That's right.
Yeah.
You were meant to be here. You're meant to be there. That's pretty cool.
For lawnmowers.
I was born to
you
sell
were meant
lawnmowers.
To cut. You were born to clip, baby. Still clipping. I like it. Hey, who are some people in your life who really influenced some of your pathing that you thought that? I always talk about this. I wrote an article once for a magazine called The Tap on the Shoulder. Who tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, I think you ought to try this? Or you better look out for this? Or why don't you try this? Mm-hmm. Or were there some people who pushed you in directions? Because you were a very independent person. As I remember you at Nelson Mack, you were just back off, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You were like that. And I think you've had to learn to embrace, right? Once you go out there, it's not about you. It's about your network. You just said it. Your network is enormous. And 85% of the jobs out there will be found through networks. So the stuff you see on LinkedIn and Indeed, maybe you'll get lucky.
Yeah.
But mostly it's your network. So what do you think?
I think the first time I had one of those major like tap on the shoulder moments was in actually grade 9, when I had this assignment where I had to record a video explaining what a socialist and capitalist like society are, and I completely phoned it in pretty much. I like set up my phone on like this. On like a pile of books, and like it was essentially a joke video that I made in like 10 minutes at one of my friends' houses, because I was like, I gotta get this assignment done, whatever. And then my teacher at the time, Mr. Fabry, essentially was like, you're going to redo this, gave me a new deadline, and he was like, you're gonna redo this, and you're going to use these resources, and you're gonna you know, like actually give it an effort. And that was the first time I like actually used a camera and had to figure out how to edit a video. And I like had to learn how to use Premiere Pro on my own in like pretty much like 2 weeks.
Hold it. We're just saying Take Premiere notes. Pro. Andre just complained about this is so hard to learn. And he's sitting in a classroom with it. You learned it in 2 weeks.
Maybe not it's, well. It's never like a, you're never done learning Premiere Pro or any Adobe program. But
yeah, it's endless.
Yeah.
With any Adobe product, you're there and you go, didn't know that. And you've been working with this thing for 4 years and like, didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And it keeps getting updated every year. So like, you're never done learning it. But like, I had to figure out how to use a DSLR to like film a video. And I like actually had to research what socialism was and what communism was. Mm-hmm. And I think I explained it incorrectly. I don't remember how I explained it, but I'm like pretty positive I had a completely different understanding of what socialism
was. So when Teach tapped you on the shoulder and said, that's unacceptable, that changed something about you?
That moment? Maybe not at the moment, but I think the process of like redoing it and giving it an actual like real effort did.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Anyone else in your CRECOM life or your work life, anyone who's kind of taking you under their wing kind of stuff?
I think my boss or like CMO right now, actually, he so when I started at YACTA, I like survived CRECOM, right? And there's a ton of work to do in CRECOM, but I was sort of able to still like...
Now, you survived it because you didn't finish it in the two-year plan.
Correct.
You took 3 years.
Yeah, I had to redo the very first semester.
and that was because, we talked about this. Is that a high school thing where you have this level of, I can get through doing this, and you go to the new place and go, oh no, I can't get through doing this.
Yeah, I think I never really had to like actually put in a ridiculous amount of effort in high school, maybe because of like the nature of the program that I was in and like with... Propel and project-based learning, like there was a little pocket to like just slide by.
There was more than a little pocket there where you could relax a lot in that program, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, you had to get your stuff done, but it was pretty, pretty relaxed in that program.
Yeah, and like through no, maybe a little bit of the fault of the program, like it's a great program and I know a lot of people that benefit from it and loved it and learned a lot. And I did enjoy it, but probably because I was able to just slide by and like coast.
And there is that in there. And it was tough giving you all that freedom and making you figure out how to be accountable for it was tough. Mm-hmm. Like that was always the paradox of the program, right?
Yeah.
Some swam beautifully and some needed a life preserver sometime in there. You saw that, right? It was, and then, but everyone came out stronger all the time. So it was interesting however you went into it. Anyway,
interesting stuff.
Yeah, and that's not possible in CRECOM. You cannot coast by.
No, you can't coast. So you have to learn, and there's some tough lessons there, right? But they're good lessons. You look back at those and go, that's part of my journey. That's part of what I had to figure out and had to understand.
Yeah, and like important lessons that I guess I just didn't have the like means to nail them right away. Like in CRECOM, if you misspell a proper noun, it's an immediate fail on the assignment. Like it's 50% off. So if you have an 80, you have a 30. If you have a 100, you're at a 50.
Oh, try that here.
Yeah.
As a teacher, you'll be attacked. Maybe they'll find you deep somewhere in a puddle of blood. I don't think that's going to work here. But that's where high school is more of a coddling feature to it, right? Where we're trying to nurture more. And remember, when you're going outside for post-secondary and you're paying for it, it's just, here's the deal. Let's go.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the reality for every post-secondary program. But it's like, if you think of the... why you're in CRECOM, right? It's to work on either you're a journalist or you're like in media production or you are making high budget ads.
Yes.
And if you misspell the name of your company, that is a very expensive fix, right?
Natan, would you come into my office, please? Yeah. We have something to talk about.
Yeah. Like, if you do that in the wrong place, like, I've misspelled our name in a caption on a post, but I can edit that. But if I did that on a billboard, my career is probably over, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's very important that you do not misspell proper nouns when you go.
Hey, you've come a long way, kid. I'm telling you. You're a long way. But that's where you learn. That's a school of life, right? You go in there and you learn what's acceptable, what's unacceptable, and how to find your best self. Like, you're looking for your best self out there all the time, right? It only comes when you get good at things. And when people say, I like that, that works, let's keep going on this. What can you do this for me? And you keep saying yes, even though you don't know what you're doing, but you figure it out. That's the beauty of life. And that's how you get good at things. So,
fake it till you make it.
Super proud of you. Yeah. Fake it till you make it. Back to that. Hey.
We never actually talked about AI.
Yeah, we never really talk about it. Do you think AI is going to be a big issue for these guys moving forward?
It'll probably be an issue for the teachers.
Well, how about you and your industry?
Oh, yeah. I use it all the time.
These like, people I don't... coming into industry, what do they have to be cognizant of down the road?
I think you have to be used to using it, at least. Maybe it's not required at this point, but with how fast it improves, like, you're either going to use it or you're going to be left behind, I think, at least in marketing. And I could be wrong, but it's like the platforms that we're using to do marketing are embracing AI. So if I'm not,
you're falling behind.
Why? Yeah, exactly. Like, what am I doing?
And I just read an article from The Atlantic about AI used to be or used to get people very nervous because it was more machine. It was more the routine jobs are going to be eliminated, or the machines will be eliminated. Like, that kind of piece of AI was now the creativity parts. Anything we turn into data that we give to a machine, the machine will be able to do better than us, right? Mm-hmm. So if we start turning our brain into data, we start figuring out ways that our creativity can be turned into data, it will become better at what we do, because it's just, it can process so quickly and it can draw so quickly from things.
Do you think that AI can completely automate your job of just advertising? Like, just go run a program, ad after ad after ad, and just automatically makes
it? Yeah, maybe in the future. We've actually tried to like create entire like pieces of content of just AI. Unfortunately, the platforms will like punish that post. Like, it will just get throttled in reach. And also, we're finding that like AI is really good at making, say, video, but it's not good at making like engaging video.
Right.
Like, if you look at
it, feels bland.
Yeah. Did you see that video of the new, I think it was like Facebook that made that new AI model with like the woman walking down the street?
Yeah, the Sora AI.
It's really impressive, but it's like there's nothing engaging about it other than AI can do this. Mm-hmm. So if I'm trying to make it use that for an ad, it's just like it's not there. But maybe in the future, I don't know.
Well, as soon as you feed it the right data, it will begin to think in a more engaging way, right?
And possibly.
And that's our danger, right? That's where anything you can turn into data, a machine can learn.
But at the same time, a machine doesn't understand things. Like, this is the power of a machine, and this is the power of the human brain. It just learns, like, pretty much if you think about it, humans are also just AI, but just made out of different things. We learn ourselves.
Again, we should be climbing a mountain to talk to you. We're wasting our time at this podcast. It's brilliant, man. But in the end, anything you feed to a machine, it will learn it.
Yeah.
If you can turn our creativity, or you can turn our expressionism into data, it will learn it and it will get better at it than us. It just will. So what are the gaps that the machine can't do is what you're talking about, right? There's a difference in a brain in here. Not if we can turn that brain process into data.
Yeah.
And that's the danger for me all the time. And that's what you might want to be worried about down the road, because they're coming after the creative. Like,
I know.
They're coming after the creatives too.
Yeah.
It's not just about machines. They're not just coming after the factory workers anymore. They're or the routine jobs. They're coming after the creatives down the road because we turn that into data. Anyway, how interesting. How cool is that? Quick advice to a young person. Quick advice.
Yeah, I think become obsessed with what you do, no matter what it is, even if like you don't enjoy it. I found that you can like fake your way into enjoying something at least a little bit, but the way to like become the best at something is to just become absolutely obsessed with it.
And get good at it.
And you do become good at it if you are obsessed with it, right? Because there is no other... Like, how do you become good at something? It's just you do it a lot. You become obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool advice.
Yeah.
And it's funny, the correlation is once you get good at something that you feel you're not good at, suddenly you begin to like it.
Yeah.
Because you're good at it. And then you become obsessed. And, and then you need a psychiatrist.
Yeah. Right?
I've got an obsessive compulsive complex. Anyway, hey, that was really cool. Can we do something called Quick Cue? And Lena's going to do it with you. Lena, explain what we're doing here.
So I'm going to ask you a bunch of quick questions, kind of like a this or that. And you don't have to think about it for too long. Just pick one. Okay, are you ready?
Okay.
Early bird or night owl?
Can I say both?
Yeah. Adventures both. Or stay at home?
I think stay at home.
Always late or always early?
Always early.
Iced coffee or cocktail?
Iced coffee.
Invisibility or able to fly?
Invisibility.
Ride a unicorn or fly on a dragon?
Dragon.
Sweet or spicy?
Sweet.
Beach or pool?
Beach.
Candy or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Passenger or driver?
Driver.
Okay, and last but not least, what is your favorite podcast?
Adventures in Career Life.
Yeah.
What if I said a different podcast? Would you cut it?
We wouldn't be able to end the recording. We'd be stuck here.
Yeah, then we'd stop the whole podcast. Wouldn't be able to upload it.
You probably have enough of my voice in this podcast to make an AI say it.
Exactly.
Adventures in Career Life. Perfect. That was beautiful. Well done. Anyway, hey, it's been a privilege having you back in. I love seeing where you were at as a former student and now seeing where you are. I think you're growing. You're getting smarter. You have such insight now about the business because you're in it. And you have to maneuver and get good at things. I love when you said get obsessed with things. In the context for me of get really good at things. And the only way to get good at things is to obsess with it, the detail of it and the technique and the strategy and the process of it. So well done, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
It was always my privilege to work with you. And thank you to co-hosts Lena and Andre and to the producing team back there. I think Grace is back there. Chin's back there. And
Achilles
looked into the window. He just put his nose up against the window. It was a beautiful moment.
So couldn't do without
thank
him.
You for your excellent production work. And that is it for another edition of Adventures in Career Land.